जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीर वनचारी यमुना तीर वनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोर नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीर वनचारी यमुना तीर वनचारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य स्तोत्र श्री श्रीमद सिद्धवाइन गैशले श्री भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय कंतराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय निताय गौ प्रेमानंदे हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आ गौरेश दी असम्बल डिवोटी आ गौरेश दी असम्बल डिवोटी आ गौरेश दी असम्बल डिवोटी आ गौरेश श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening. Text number 5. Word meanings, Maitreya Uvacha. Maitreya said, Sadhu, devotee, Vira, O warrior, Twaya, by you, Prishtam, inquired, Avatarakatam, topics on the incarnation of the Lord, Hare, of the personality of Godhead, Yat, that which, Twam, your good self, Prichasi, asking me, Martyanam, of those who are destined for death, Mrityupasha, the chain of birth and death, Vishatanim, source of liberation. Maitreya Uvacha, Sadhu Vira Twaya Prishtam, Avatara Katam Hare, Yatvam Prichasi Martyanam, Mrityupasha Vishatanim, Maitreya Uvacha, Sadhu Vira Twaya Prishtam, Avatara Katam Hare, Yatvam Prichasi Martyanam, Mrityupasha Vishatanim, Maitreya Uvacha, Sadhu Vira Twaya Prishtam, Avatara Katam Hare, Yatvam Prichasi Martyanam, Mrityupasha Vishatanim. Maitreya Uvacha, Sadhu Vira Twaya Prishtam, Avatara Katam Hare, Yatvam Prichasi Martyanam, Mrityupasha Vishatanim. Sadhu Vira Twaya Prishnam, Avatara Katam Hare, Sadhu Vira Twaya Prishtam, Avatara Katam Hare, Yattam Prichasi Martyanam, Mrityupasha Vishatanim. Translation. The great sage Maitreya said, O warrior, the inquiry made by you is just befitting a devotee because it concerns the incarnation of the personality of Godhead. He is the source of liberation from the chain of birth and death for all those who are otherwise destined to die. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The great sage Maitreya addressed Vidura as a warrior, not only because Vidura belonged to the Kuru family, but because he was anxious to hear about the chivalrous activities of the Lord in his incarnations of Varaha and Nrsimha. Because the inquiries concerned the Lord, they were perfectly befitting a devotee. A devotee has no taste for hearing anything mundane. There are many topics of mundane warfare, but a devotee is not inclined to hear them. The topics of the warfare in which the Lord engages do not concern the war of death, but the war against the chain of Maya, which obliges one to accept repeated birth and death. In other words, one who takes delight in hearing the war topics of the Lord is relieved from the chains of birth and death. Foolish people are suspicious of Krishna's taking part in the battle of Kurukshetra, not knowing that his taking part ensured liberation for all who were present on the battlefield. It is said by Bhishma Dev that all who were present on the battlefield of Kurukshetra attain their original spiritual existences after death. Therefore, hearing the war topics of the Lord is as good as any other devotional service. Om Jnana Timirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Continuing the conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. Vidura's status is quite interesting, actually. Of course, you know his father is Vyasadev, and his mother is a maidservant. So he's generally considered to be a Shudra. But here he's addressed as Vira, O warrior. There are repeated times in Maitreya when he's addressing Vidura throughout these two cantos, third and fourth canto, where he addresses him by a Kshatriya name. He calls him Arindama, for example. Arindama means one who curbs down the enemy, Ari. Arindama, the enemy is Ari. So he calls him Arindama. It's always struck me as kind of odd, actually, that he's addressed in that way. He's also called repeatedly, quite a few times, maybe like 10 times, quite a few times. Maitreya addresses him as Kshatta. Kshatta means a royal advisor. And it may be that it's a position that's given to certain castes. Just like Sutta, for example. Suttas, they have certain, according to their caste, Sutta's a mixed caste also. And like Ugashrava Sutta or Sutta Goswami, Roma Harshan Sutta. So one thing that Suttas do is they recite the Puranas. So they also drive chariots. So they have different, according to their caste, they have certain occupations. So it could be, I'm not completely sure, but it could be that Kshatta means advisor, royal advisor. That may be something that has to do with the caste that Vidura is in, this mixed caste that he's in. And we know, of course, that I never think of him as a warrior. We think of him as an advisor, but he's addressed here as a warrior. But we do know that he carried a bow, because when Duryodhan insulted him, when Vidura was trying to advise Dhritarashtra, basically he was telling him, get rid of the son. So you can understand why Duryodhan was a little upset. So, of course, he spoke very bad about Vidura. What he called him, the son of a kept mistress, I think was it. And then, of course, Dhritarashtra wouldn't listen. And Duryodhan was so, he's offense personified, so he knows how to speak nice words. So it says Vidura left there and he placed his bow beside the door and then he left to go on pilgrimage. You think, it seems odd to me that Vidura is walking around carrying a bow. Because you think of him as a Brahmin. He certainly had Brahmin. I was thinking, when you think, is it cast by birth or cast by qualification? It seems like in either case it didn't seem to fit with Vidura because, he's a Shudra, but he's advising his stepbrother and or half brother, whatever it is, and he's also, his qualification. He certainly had Brahminical qualifications. He left, of course, when he left to go on pilgrimage. Like he's called here a warrior, but he didn't want anything to do with the war. He left to go on pilgrimage instead. He traveled for 30 some years on pilgrimage. He came back at the very actually after Krishna's left this planet, everything was wrapping up. That's when Vidura came back. Then, of course, he went to Hastinapura again, and he told Dhritarashtra, get out of Maya, come on, let's go to the Himalayas. And so he's a preacher, obviously. So that's Vidura, quite an interesting character. So here, Maitreya is thanking him, praising him for his question, for asking, because he wants to hear about an avatar of the Lord. Now, of course, this avatar katha, Ishanukata, is one of the 10 subjects of the Srimad Bhagavatam, listed at the beginning of the 10th chapter of the second canto. Ishanukata. There's a lot about avatars in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right away, Suta Goswami, in the third chapter of the first canto, after he hears the questions by the sages, the 6 questions, one of them, they're not all questions exactly, they're requests also, some of the requests. So please speak about this or that. So one thing the sages at Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami to speak about is the incarnations of the Lord. So right away in the third chapter, Suta Goswami goes through something like 25 incarnations of the Lord. And in that context, of course, we get the Ete Chang Shakala Pungsa Krishna Stu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna's not just one of the avatars, he's the source of all the other avatars. He's Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. So the sages at Naimisharanya, they wanted to hear about the incarnations of the Lord. And we hear throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, repeatedly the devotees are asking, please speak more, please speak more. And especially they're interested in hearing about Krishna. Now here, it may seem like, of course, Vidura wants to hear about this specific form of the Lord, this incarnation of the Lord. But always in the devotees' minds, they're thinking this is Krishna coming like this. Keshava Drita, Nara Hari Rupa, Keshava Drita, Keshava Drita. I keep saying it's Keshava. That's Jayadev Goswami. Of course, he's a very elevated soul, devotee of Krishna, Keshava. So when he sees incarnations of the Lord, then he thinks this is Krishna coming. Oh, let's see how wonderful Krishna is. He can even come as a boar and fight with big demons, biggest demons. And devotees take great pleasure in this. In the Krishna Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami, there's a long section where he explains, he gives examples, quotations from the Bhagavatam to show how all the people, the devotees who are asking questions, they're interested specifically in Krishna. The hearers and the speakers, there's quite a range of them in the Srimad Bhagavatam, at least the main ones that carry on the conversation throughout the cantos. Jiva Goswami explains it's actually Krishna. Sometimes it may appear they're interested in something else, but actually it's Krishna they want to hear about. Now Vidura, of course, he had personal association with Krishna. Krishna was said that Krishna would, he would massage his feet. Krishna would put his feet in Vidura's lap and Vidura would massage his feet. And of course there's a famous story when Krishna came to Hastinapur to meet with Duryodhan. And Duryodhan, he prepared a great arrival feast for Krishna, but Krishna didn't accept it. He went to Vidura's house and accepted humble prasadam there. That's where we hear the story about he's being served banana peels, and that was fine with him because he accepts the devotion. He didn't care for the great opulence offered by Duryodhana. I guess Duryodhana was trying to influence him somehow because Krishna was a mediator, so he was trying to bribe him. Krishna understood his motives, though. He could see the pure devotion of Vidura. So Vidura is a great soul. So see, Prabhupada says here, great sage Maitreya addressed Vidura as a warrior, not only because Vidura belonged to the Kuru family, so he's a warrior by association, but because he was anxious to hear about the chivalrous activities of the Lord in his incarnations of Varaha and Narsingha. It's interesting that Prabhupada points this out because, of course, he wanted to hear about any pastimes of Krishna, but it just happens to be that this is coming up right now. And he heard that there was a fight, that he killed this demon when he rescued the earth. Lord Varaha also killed this demon. So he said, well, what about that part of the story? Can you tell us that part? Want to hear the fight? There's a lot of fighting in the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually. Not only Krishna and his avatars, but so many places. We have all these battles, many, many fights. But of course, the asuras and the devas are always fighting with each other. So we have a lot of that. And I have to say, it's not my favorite part of the Bhagavatam to read these battle scenes. I say, okay, another blow, another person with his head cut off, and so on. They're pretty gruesome, actually, some of them, right? Of course, Krishna, he killed all those soldiers of Jarasandha. He kept coming year after year after year with all his soldiers, and Krishna killed all of them. And they were like rivers of blood. And it's described there how some people like to hear this, and others, they have a weak stomach. They don't, they're not interested so much in hear about these things. Of course, as Prabhupada says here, that interesting line that he says in the purport here. Let's see. What does he say about death? Devotee has their... He says they're not the... in other words, those who take the light. Where's that sentence? Do you remember hearing that sentence about... this is not the war of death, Prabhupada said. I can't find it. Oh, here it is. The Lord engages, the topics of the warfare in which the Lord engages do not concern the war of death, but the war against the chain of Maya, which obliges one to accept repeated birth and death. So it sure sounds like death when you read about it, but it's not, whatever Krishna's involved in, there's nothing ordinary about it. You get purified by hearing it, even though it is so much death. Sometimes I think about that with our children. You know, right away they're hearing how Krishna killed this person and Krishna killed this person. Krishna's really doing a lot of killing. You know, you read to your kids Krishna book at night, and then they I don't know about some of these stories whether they should be rated for children, but of course because they're about Krishna, they're being purified by hearing them. That's the point, of course. Just like, it's interesting that at the end of the Rasa Leela, specifically it said there, by hearing this you'll become purified. All your, the lust within your heart, the material contamination, the disease of the heart will be cured by hearing this sex story you just heard about, hearing about this romance and sex. Why? It will cure you of your sex desire by reading about Krishna's sex life. You're hearing about Krishna's sex life. You know, it's interesting. This is a bit of an aside, but we're cautioned, of course, not to jump to that and just, read that. And because when you're, in fact, there are places that Prabhupada says, until one is liberated, one should not hear these confidential pastimes of the Lord. But in the, there's a collection of a devotee translated commentaries on the Bhagavatam from a lot of different acharyas. And I looked at the commentaries on this last verse of the Rasa Leela, and none of them give that caution, actually, the other acharyas. They all explain just the power of it. They emphasize the power of hearing Krishna's Rasa Leela pastimes, how that will purify the heart. And the word is there about dhira. So apparently this word can be translated differently. It can mean that one should be dhira in order to hear this, but also it can mean that one will become dhira by hearing this. One will become sober and purified by hearing these things. So, in any case, anything related to Krishna, it's purifying to the heart. Of course, we take guidance from Srila Prabhupada and how we approach these things. So, let's see, there was something else I wanted to mention here about... Oh, about avatars in general. Actually, this is, I was thinking how we also have our avatar that we see every day, the Archa avatar. The deity is also considered to be an avatar. Why is that? It's because the deity is made of, apparently, to our vision, things of this world. So the Lord has descended in a form that we can perceive with our senses. Just like when Krishna comes in some other avatar form, then ordinary people can see him. Actually, in one sense, they're not really seeing him, because to see Krishna, you need transcendental vision. But they allow to see, just like we can see Krishna now without transcendental vision, in the form of the deity. And of course, that's very purifying. And I've been thinking just recently, this isn't really connected to this class exactly, but about our deities, Radha Krishna deities, Radha Shyam Sundar. You notice that Srimati Radharani, of course we have two Radhas and two Krishnas. And that has to be because the big deities, they're not bathed and so on. So you have small deities that you bathe. And so our big Radharani, they have different poses actually. Our two Radharanis have different poses. I don't know if you ever paid attention to this. Generally, Radharani has one of two poses. She has her hand in a blessing pose, which our large Radharani has. And our smaller Radharani has giving something to Krishna, Tambula or Tulsi or whatever. I tend to think of it as Tambula, because Krishna's eating it. So there's actually some significance to this. One thing is, I was curious, maybe I asked to ask Shitala Prabhu about this, because she is the one who originally arranged for our deities. She had much experience of buying deities for temples and having them made in Jaipur. And when there was discussion of us getting Radha Krishna deities when we built this temple, there must have been some discussion of the pose of the deities. And as I remember it, I thought the deities were supposed to be modeled after Radha Shyam Sundar in Vrindavan. But maybe I'm misunderstood, because Radharani in Vrindavan is not, she doesn't have this blessing pose. She has the other pose with the hand down. In fact, Prabhupada specifically, I was reading that just recently, I don't remember, one of the, either in the Hari Stories or else in Lilamrita, that Prabhupada specifically requested that Radharani be in that pose in Vrindavan, Radha Shyam Sundar. So in any case, we have Radharani doing both things. We have Radharani giving us the blessing, and we have Radharani offering to Krishna. What that signifies, I read someplace, is that the service of Srimati Radharani. She's blessing us, but she's always engaged in serving Krishna. That, you know, she's giving Krishna something. She's very beautiful, actually. I mean, I don't know. I know a lot of devotees don't stand up close. But our small Srimati Radharani, our small Radha Krishna deities, they're very, very beautiful. And just like the big deities, the devotees put so much devotion into dressing them very nicely every day. I have a big picture right in front of my my desk, actually, of our small Radha Krishna deities. Because there's a particular, I got it from one of the calendars, and this particular picture, Krishna's looking at Radharani. You can see he definitely looks like he's looking right at Srimati Radharani. So anyway, this is something about Archa Avatar, the incarnation we're able to see every day, an incarnation of the Lord. Now there's something else here. This is something I've thought of before. A phrase that Prabhupada uses here, he says, a devotee has no taste for hearing anything mundane. So of course that's a really important instruction for us. We're supposed to want to hear Krishna Katha, not other things. And Prabhupada has a lot of quite heavy statements about this. But this kind of sparked a thought of mine that I think I'll look on the Vedabase for a devotee, dot, dot, dot. What does Prabhupada say about a devotee? We call ourselves devotees. We call each other devotees. We're a society of devotees. We use this word. So what is a devotee? So of course there are like, I don't know, thousands and thousands of, so I tried to do a devotee does, or a devotee is or isn't, or a devotee always, or a devotee never, or I started looking for things like that. So of course quickly I came up with a couple of pages full of things. I thought I'd read a few of those. A devotee, what is a devotee? I call myself, I think I'm a devotee, or I'm trying to be a devotee. What does that mean? Actually, I'm going to take this is the longest, most of these are short. But this has to do with the point that Prabhupada makes here about a devotee is not inclined to hear. Actually, he says a devotee has no taste for hearing anything mundane. There are many topics of mundane warfare, but a devotee is not inclined to hear them. I know devotees these days are hearing about the, you know, the danger of nuclear war. Someone mentioned something to me about that. Anyway, I always think, well, if you die of, you know, you hit by a truck or you die with a nuke, what difference does it make, right? It's going to be the same for you. So anyway, so this is one, this is from the Srila Prabhupada's purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 5.12.13. The pure devotee is never, or he says, the symptoms of pure devotees are described in this verse. Actually, I didn't put what the verse is, but it's 5.2.13. The pure devotee is never interested in material topics. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has strictly prohibited his devotees to talk about worldly matters. Gramya varta na kahibe. One should not indulge in talking unnecessarily about news of the mundane world. One should not waste time in this way. This is a very important feature in the life of a devotee. A devotee has no other ambition than to serve Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Krishna consciousness movement was started to engage people 24 hours daily in the service of the Lord and in his glorification. The students in this institution engage in the cultivation of Krishna consciousness from 5 in the morning to 10 at night. They actually have no opportunity to waste their time unnecessarily by discussing politics, sociology, and current events. These will go their own way. A devotee is concerned only with serving Krishna positively and seriously. So that's a very important, sober instruction from Srila Prabhupada, which he repeated over and over and over again, actually. There's no question Prabhupada wanted us always engaged in Krishna consciousness. That's sadhana bhakti. You use all your time for practicing Krishna consciousness, or, you know, connecting everything you do with Krishna. In other words, trying to stay Krishna conscious. Prabhupada would say, mold your life so that you can't forget Krishna, so that you can always remember Krishna. So I'll just read some of these. A devotee does these different things. A devotee always prays, for my misdeeds may I be born again and again, but my only prayer is that I may not forget your service. This is something I think about a lot. We have so many places where we're told we're supposed to want to go back to Godhead, but we also have this other side where it doesn't really matter, actually. In fact, when the devotee is extremely elevated in the Madhurya Kadambani, this is one place this is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the devotee doesn't know whether he's in his body or not, or in the material world or not. It's kind of like irrelevant whether he's back to Godhead or not, because he's always with Krishna. So it's not a concern for a devotee who's on a very high level. So devotee has, so this is devotee praise. May I be born again, as long as I don't forget Krishna. The devotee has that much mental strength. Interesting phrase, huh? Devotee has that much mental strength, and he prays to the Lord. May I be born again and again, but let me be born in the home of your pure devotee, so that I may again get a chance to develop myself. So we may be thinking, well, I got a long ways to go, so at least Krishna give me another opportunity in my next life, a better opportunity. Give me the association of your devotees. So here's something on a different topic. A devotee is not anxious to possess anything. He is satisfied with whatever is obtainable by God's grace. Now, some of these, you can see, they have to do with, you know, devotees in practice, and some of them are, you know, maybe an instruction according to your level of practice, or some of them describe really the characteristics of a very elevated devotee, what we're aspiring to come to that level. I know, I always think of this, Mahatma Prabhu, he likes to do these, what do you call, affirmations. He has the japa affirmations. He wrote these books. So people do these things to try to, you know, improve themselves. And they put on your mirror in the morning, you know, I, you know, da da da, I will think of Krishna today, or those kinds of things, you know. So when I see these, I have the ones for japaks, I have them on my wall, and I look at them and I think, because he says, how does he say it? I am chanting my rounds with great enthusiasm, or something like that. So they're all positives. You're supposed to be basically programming yourself to think. So when I look at them, I always think, really, I should say, I should do this, I should do this, I should do this. I guess that's the whole idea of it. You're trying to convince yourself that by saying, I will do it, or I am doing it, maybe that'll help you do it. So some of these things, they're like, well, yeah, I really should do this, but I'm not there yet. Anyway, so here's a little more. A devotee, like this one, I hope to get there someday. A devotee always merges in transcendental happiness, and therefore he has no experience of material distresses. Wouldn't that be nice? Huh? This transcendental happiness is called eternal bliss. According to the opinion of devotees, constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord is called samadhi or trance. That's interesting. According to the opinion of devotees, in other words, other people think of samadhi as something else, but we think of samadhi as constant remembrance of the Supreme Lord. If one is constantly entranced, there is no possibility of being attacked or even touched by the modes of material nature. Actually, Prabhupada get pretty heavy about this sometimes. He said a devotee should be happy. There are places where he said, if you're not happy, it means you're not executing Krishna devotional service. Of course, this is directly from Bhagavad Gita, because Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanna Atma Na Shochati Na Kangchati. When you're practicing bhakti, Prasanna Atma, you're supposed to be satisfied. Actually, one time Prabhupada said a really heavy thing. Actually, this was in an article a devotee wrote, and I said, maybe we should take this out. This is a little, but I'll tell you. The devotee said, was asking Prabhupada, well, Prabhupada, some devotees, they say they're not happy in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said, that means they have not even begun their spiritual life. Like, whoa. So, anyway, in other words, probably still he's making this point. If you're actually engaging in devotional service, you should be happy because you're on the transcendental platform, you know. So you have to, look within and see, am I actually trying to do some of these things a devotee is supposed to be? So the Lord says, that the devotee always exists in his heart, and he also exists always in the heart of the devotee. Of course, this is Krishna speaking to Durvasa Muni, telling him he can't forgive him for his offense to Ambarish Maharaj. He said, I'm completely under my devotee's control. Devotee's in my heart, and I'm in the devotee's heart. That's it. This is our world. That's Krishna's world. Krishna and his devotee, that's his world. A devotee always thinks of the Lord continuously. While chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, the words Krishna and Hare immediately remind him of all the Lord's activities. I always think, I think this way is we're supposed to remember Krishna at the time of death when things are going haywire, probably freaking out because, you know, the darkness is coming in or you're losing your breath or whatever. It seems like we might be inclined to panic at that moment and try to remember Krishna. I think it's so bad I can't even remember Krishna when I'm chanting his name. So how much of a challenge is it going to be? So what can you do? You have to just keep trying, right? So he says, so when we chant Hare and Krishna, the mantra, it reminds us of the Lord's activities. Since his entire life is engaged, the devotee's entire life is engaged in the service of the Lord, a devotee cannot forget the Lord at any time. Just as an ordinary man always engages his mind in material activities, a devotee always engages his mind in spiritual activities. So this is a point Prabhupada would also make. How can you forget Krishna? You're doing service to him. So of course we have to remember, well, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing service to him. Like devotees would say, well, how can I remember Krishna when I'm out in a book distribution? And Prabhupada would say, well, you're distributing Krishna's book. How can you not remember Krishna? So of course our minds are fickle. Let's see. So here's another perspective on this. I'll go for another 5 minutes. I won't. A devotee always fears, because I am, this is the devotee's fear. You know that famous Prabhupada said, your problem is you're not afraid enough of the material world. So he says here, a devotee always fears, because I am associated with the material world, so many contaminations affect me. Therefore, he is always alert in fear, which gradually diminishes his material association. This is in the context of Devaki and Kamsa killing her children and so on, and her fear. Kamsa represents fear of material existence, which helps one make spiritual advancement. Here's a nice one. A devotee always appreciates the activities of other devotees. So that's something, of course, we can try to put into effect. And here's a related one, one of the last ones I have here. A devotee never finds fault with others, but tries to find his own and thus rectify them as far as possible. This we see a lot in Prabhupada Lila. Prabhupada didn't like to hear. He himself would point out faults in his disciples, but he didn't like hearing his disciples complain about other devotees. He really didn't like that. Says, oh, this is interesting. Now this is, you know, to give us confidence. There's no question of chance for a devotee, always in Krishna consciousness. For he is guaranteed entrance into the abode of Krishna by dint of his devotion to the Lord. So no chance at the time of death, if you're actually Krishna conscious. Really, the idea is, you know, if you're ready to go back to Godhead, you're ready before that moment arrives, actually. You're already back to Godhead, in one sense, because you're always Krishna conscious. You're always associating with Krishna. So that transition, in some sense, it's not a big deal. Of course, we find that, you know, maybe we're on a sort of on the borderline. We're not quite there. So it is going to be a test, and we have to prepare for it. But that idea is also there. If you're ready to go back to Godhead, you're already back to Godhead, even if you're in the material world. Jivan Mukta. Let's see here. Naturally, when one is adapted to the spiritual way of life, well, this is about association, he will not want to mix with materialistic men. That would go against his grain. The birds of a feather flock together. We associate with devotees. One may test himself by seeing how far he is inclined to live in a solitary place without unwanted association. So here, a solitary place means associating with devotees, not associating with non-devotees. Naturally, a devotee has no taste for unnecessary sporting and cinema, going to or enjoying some social function, because he understands that these are simply a waste of time. A devotee has no suffering at all, because so-called suffering is also God's grace for a devotee who sees God in everything. So this is a great challenge. When we can say it, you know, technically, philosophically, we understand, yes, this is Krishna. Like Prabhupada, you know, if the bombs came, he said, well, this is Krishna coming in another form. So we always tell ourselves, yes, I always have to see that this is Krishna's arrangement. But when we're really challenged with something, it's hard to put it into effect. Now, what can we do? We have to just pray, Krishna, help me to see this, that this is your grace, he says. So-called suffering is God's grace. It was grace. Grace is mercy for a devotee who sees God in everything. Though, of course, that's what we're practicing. We're practicing to see Krishna in everything. This is another one about, I won't read this one. It's another one about not associating with non-devotees. He says we can have business transactions with them, but there's this word aprasangata. So sangha, and then prasanga makes it more broad, and then aprasanga, no prasanga, means not to be in intimate touch with everyone. We have only intimate touch with devotees. Let's see, I read that one. Actually, I'm almost through these. I could have cut hundreds of them, of course. I just got a couple pages. A devotee has no other course than to take shelter of the Lord at every step. That's also, of course, something we train ourselves. We say Krishna's name. I can say maybe that's one thing I've kind of successfully achieved in some sense by practice. I spontaneously, if I stub my toe or something, I'll say Krishna. Well, that's good. I didn't say some swear word. I said Krishna's name. So that's kind of a good thing, because sometimes something will happen very quickly. Some danger will come. So Prabhupada says, devotee has no other course than to take shelter of the Lord at every step. So this is the final one I'll read. When a conditioned soul is purified, he is called a devotee. When a conditioned soul is purified. So at least I am, certainly a conditioned soul, trying to become purified. A devotee has his relationship. Actually, a Prabhupada, he said, we don't call ourselves, you don't refer to yourself as a devotee. Of course, maybe we do, but sometimes Prabhupada heard, I think devotee wrote a poem or something he read to Prabhupada. That was the context. I remember reading it recently. Prabhupada said, yes, this is very nice, but don't call yourself a devotee. We think we're aspiring to be devotees, or maybe it was Vaishnava. I think it was devotee, but anyway, either case. The devotee is never interested in material. Oh no, that's not the one. Sorry. When a conditioned soul is purified, he is called a devotee. A devotee has his relationship only with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his only occupational duty is to execute devotional service to satisfy the Lord. This service is rendered through the Lord's representative, the spiritual master. Yasya deve para bhaktir yata deve tita guru. When the devotee executes devotional service properly, he attains the highest perfection of life, love of Godhead. There are many places where Prabhupada says a devotee always thinks, wants to do everything to please Krishna. He's always thinking, how can I please Krishna? How can I please my spiritual master? Will this please Krishna? Will this please my spiritual master? That's his meditation. That's how he decides what is favorable for devotional service, what is unfavorable. That's the devotee's meditation. So these are all meant to be guidance for how we live our lives and try to stay in the association of Krishna. It's actually here we're hearing the topic how Krishna Katha, by hearing Krishna Katha, keeps you in the association of Krishna. So many ways we're trying to become devotees, being in the association of Krishna. And Prabhupada has given us many, many instructions on how to do that. I'll read the verse again. The great sage Maitreya said, O warrior, the inquiry made by you is just befitting a devotee because it concerns the incarnation of the personality of Godhead. He is the source of liberation from the chain of birth and death for all those who are otherwise destined to die. Madhumati Prabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. One comment was, I really, it really struck me when you said that it's about Krishna. All these incarnations are there, but the topic is Krishna. It's just turned something in my understanding of that.
Yeah.
That's who it is about. It's about
Krishna.
Yeah,
sometimes we have maybe this mood Vishnu is somebody else, or Avatar is somebody else. But they're all Krishna, appearing in different ways.
Anyway, I appreciate that. I have two questions. One question is, you mentioned that other acharyas do not, they do not, let's say, discourage, or you don't have a qualification to read the higher pastimes, because that will purify. But you said Prabhupada tells us. So the fact that Prabhupada says, you're supposed to read the nine cantos and, then read Krishna's pastimes or other pastimes, is that something that Srila Prabhupada himself said, or or have others, Bhaktisiddhanta or other acharyas, have mentioned something like that?
Well, I'm sure Prabhupada is picking up, or at least he's picking it up from his spiritual master. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati certainly had that mood. He was very, very cautious, actually, about his disciples and what they read. So, and I would suspect that, you know, he picked it up. He's coming in parampara somehow. I'm trying to think right away some verse in the Bhagavatam, or maybe it's just implied. I don't know. I can't think of a specific quotation that I could cite that makes that point. Also, I was thinking, you know, maybe the acharyas, it's not that in commenting on this verse that they don't think like that themselves, but they just wanted to emphasize another point, because that kind of thing happens. You can, you know, so many points can be emphasized in different verses. So somehow they just, that, and also maybe it has something more to do with their audience. That could have something also, who they were writing for. But yeah, now we'll see. Now I'm sure some of you are listening to Bhaktivigyan Maharaj's seminars on the Bhagavatam. So I've listened to his classes, you know, he's given on this before, this idea of overview of the Bhagavatam and how it progresses. And he describes how, you'll see if you know, I'm sure this will come out in his course. And he's very good at analyzing, you know, why this story is there in this particular canto, and this is the theme of this canto. And it does go step by step, bringing us up to different, higher and higher levels of devotion, actually, until you get to, you know, the 10th canto, then you're ready for the 10th canto. So that theme is definitely there in the Bhagavatam, if you have the eyes to see it, or you're instructed in that way. Of course, Prabhupada told us to read the Bhagavatam from the beginning, from the lotus feet of Krishna. Now that also, of course, that's an aspect of looking at it. We're supposed to look at the lotus feet first and then gradually work our way up to the face of the Lord. That's a common theme that comes up in writing of the acharyas, how you see the Lord. In fact, that's also in the Bhagavatam. We meditate on the Lord beginning with the feet. Descriptions of Lord Vishnu are there beginning with the feet. So that principle could be applied, you'd say, that you should work your way up to the 10th canto, which is the Lord's lotus face. And the smile on his face is the ultimate, the ultimate beautiful, the sweetest of the sweet. It's Krishna's smile. And he always has a smile. Was there specific instruction about not going to the 10th canto immediately in the Bhagavatam? In the Bhagavatam itself. I think that was the idea. Yeah, maybe in the Bhagavatam itself. Well, like that, I couldn't cite a specific verse, but we get indications in different ways, more or less what I was saying. I was giving some different examples. Yeah, any book you read, you start at the beginning. Yeah. That makes sense. But one thing, it's such a big book, you may want to jump up there, you know. It takes a long time to get there, especially with purports. Prabhupada gave us Krishna books so we would have it. That was Prabhupada's mercy, actually. You can say that was his mercy. He gave it to us and he held our hand as we entered into that confidential abode of the Lord. Come with me, I'll show you. I'll protect you from the dangers. That's what he did. That's Prabhupada's mercy. He wanted us to have it, and he knew he may not be able to do it himself, so he gave it to us. And even he gave it to us to distribute. Even people who don't know anything, he presented it in such a way that they would not be offensive to Krishna by reading the way Prabhupada presented Krishna. Of course, he instructed them on the way. He's teaching them Bhagavad Gita from the first page of the Krishna book. So they're getting Bhagavad Gita, they're getting introduction to Krishna the proper way. What Prabhupada didn't like was, especially people who have no qualification, no spiritual qualification, and they take Krishna's pastimes with the gopis as sex. You know? I was thinking actually from a, what was I reading the other day? And I was thinking, this is so beautiful. The story of Radha Krishna. And the way our acharyas have analyzed in different ways the whole drama of what goes on between Radha and Krishna. It's so attractive, actually. It's so amazing. I mean, this is wonderful romance. It's very, just from an ordinary point of view. So you can see how even materialistic people would be attracted to this. This, even as ordinary drama, what goes on between these two lovers and the way they speak to each other, the poetry and their speech and the word jugglery and all these things that go on. It's very, very high level, even from a materialistic point of view. But Prabhupada didn't like people studying it in that way because they're missing the point because they think it's ordinary. They see it as mundane. So Prabhupada is presenting it so that it's not. So Pundarik Prabhu, you had a question?
Service.
Yeah.
So I think Srila Prabhupada was that was the objection that if we hear only of the gopis, that means there's something wrong with our understanding.
I've always wondered about that verse because I think, well, won't hearing anything about Krishna purify the heart? But somehow this point is made and it comes out in all of the Acharya's commentaries, specifically hearing Rasa Leela gets rid of your sex desire, basically. And I would think, well, hearing Battle of Kurukshetra, hearing Bhagavad Gita, anything, but somehow or other, they make this point specifically in relation to this particular leela. Of course, we know, of course, Bhaktivinoda analyzes different leelas of Krishna, how they help get rid of different anartas within the heart. So why not, right? Krishna can invest potency in different leelas according to his will. So this particular leela is said to have this particular potency. Yeah.
All the many of the chapters are at the end of all the different stories of Bhagavatam give some false stuti that gives similar
mundane things. That's another thing I've always wondered about. If you read this story, then if you're a king, you'll be an emperor, and I always wonder why is that in there. I guess it's to attract the non-devotee, or people who have those desires. They keep reading, they're associating with Krishna through the Bhagavatam, they become purified. That's the idea. There's quite a bit of that in the Bhagavatam, actually. Yes, Pundarandara, you've had your turn. There's other people with questions. No offense, but go ahead. Trivikram Prabhu.
So Vidura being called a warrior, even though he was born from a maidservant.
Can you start from the beginning again? Sorry, I have some hearing problems.
Yeah, yeah. So the question on Vidura being called a warrior.
Vidura being called a warrior. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's because he is involved in administration, and one clause within Kshatriya Dharma is that if your occupation is like warfare and your occupation is to do with war and planning and different things, then you can also be considered a warrior, apart from board, you see? So I'm thinking, well, that's one point. And then also he came from the Kuru clan also, and so... So those are consideration of him, being considered a warrior.
Well, Prabhupada says, yeah, he's addressed as a warrior not only because Vidura belonged to the Kuru family, because he was anxious to hear about this particular leela. So he's considered a warrior just because he's part of that family. But it always struck me as interesting that he carried a bow. We don't hear about him fighting. Prabhupada says Bhishma fought on thousands of battlefields. If he translates one verse, I think thousands of battlefields. That's a lot of fighting. There was really that much fighting going on? That seemed to be, actually, there seems to be a lot of fighting going on. And it's not really a, well, I guess it is, because disparaged, I guess it is, because Bhumi Devi is saying all these armies trampling, marching. You know, when armies march, they boom, boom, left, right, left, right. So she didn't like that. And they're always fighting. So I guess Bhishma Devi did a lot of fighting. But we don't hear about Vidura, and that's my point. We don't hear about Vidura fighting anybody. Well, he had a bow. Maybe it was just for, like, a symbol. I'm one of the Kurus, so I have a bow, too. Even I think the Vaishyas would use bows. I think, isn't it mentioned about the Brajbasis? They had bows, some of them. They have to have some protection, so they... Bows and slingshots. Okay, we have just a couple minutes. Yes, Mataji.
Yeah, about the subject of a devotee being not interested in mundane subjects like news and all that. I'm always wondering, where is the equilibrium? Like, I'll give you an example.
What is the word I didn't
hear? The equilibrium. The
impetus? No.
No. Yeah.
What's the word? Where is the equality? Equality of what?
No, how to make it functional in your devotional life.
Well, you're talking about balance.
Balance.
About learning about
that's
the world,
yeah.
Basically. That's the idea, right?
Yeah.
How much should we know about the world?
Yeah. So, because I'll give you an example. One time on the news in Montreal, they said that the water was contaminated and it shouldn't be drinking unless it's boiled. So in the temple, they didn't advise, they didn't put any sign on any taps that the water shouldn't be drink, because they said to me, well, we don't listen to news. Then somebody came from outside and said, water, you cannot drink it. It's contaminated. You should advise the public. So it's always bewildering for me, what is the balance of a devotee not being aware of the external world? This year. Montreal. So what would be your advice on this?
Well, you can always ask somebody who's watching, listening to the news, because you can always find somebody who's listening to the news. You don't have to do it yourself. Or I think Ujjana Swami, he does like a news summary that he looks at once a week or something like that, you know. The problem is we indulge, you know, we're attracted to these things. So we're more interested in news of the mundane world than the news about Krishna. So we get sucked in. And of course, they're expert, the people who are, you know, giving us this stuff, this nonsense. And now you have, you know, we read this Gramya Katha Nashundibe, don't hear Gramya Katha. So now the whole world is the Gram. We can hear what's going on in any single corner of the world. It's just, we're flooded with it. And they have, you know, the purveyors of this, they have all their psychological tricks to get us sucked in there. So we have to be very careful. That's the point. So we have to, you know, it's like anything else, like, be honest with ourselves. Am I indulging here? Do I need to know this? How much do I need to know? Then we have to, you know, decide for ourselves. I tend to think that, not that I'm not attracted, because I like to know what's going on too, but I tend to think if I didn't know anything, I'd be perfectly fine, actually. Nothing's going to happen to me if I don't know. Someone's going to tell me. Mukhi's going to announce it in the morning announcements if our water's bad or whatever. You know, something's happening that I need to worry about. I think Prabhupada didn't, you know, there was a time, of course, when he was commenting on the news, but most of the time, he didn't. You read his, he didn't. You know, look at a newspaper himself. He didn't follow the news. Of course, some of our acharyas did, actually. I was really surprised, actually. I read that Bhakti Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta both used to read newspaper regularly. Of course, they were writing commentary also regularly. And also, when you're on their level, they're not attracted to it, obviously. Probably, didn't he say, let's see what the demons are doing today, something like that, you know, in the newspaper. So it's not like, you know, we're attracted to it. But for us, conditioned souls, there's a danger there, and we get sucked into it, and we're not thinking of Krishna necessarily. It reminds me one time we were going on Harinam, and there was we were going to chant at a Grateful Dead concert in a parking lot. There was all the deadheads were gathering. And there was someone who had just come to the temple and spent a few days there. And he was coming with us. And he said, I think I want to go into the concert. And we said, well, this is my... He said, no, when I go in there, I think of Krishna. I said, yeah, right. You're going to see the Grateful Dead and think of Krishna? Yeah, right. So, you know, we have to be careful about what we're... am I really... do I really need this? And so, you know, we have to be careful about, that's the basic principle, you know, be honest with ourselves and be careful and don't indulge. And, you know, it's hard to say, you know, set some kind of rule. You have to judge according to the time, place, and circumstance, I guess. We have to use our intelligence. And a lot of it has to be our motive. Do I want to cheat or not? Do I want to be an honest, sincere, serious and sincere, to use Prabhupada's favorite phrase. I want to be a serious and sincere devotee. So we just have to be careful. Krishna will provide.
So would you say that you would be confident that without even looking, if there is something important, Krishna would just tell you?
Yeah, Krishna will tell me. You can have faith like that. Krishna is always looking after me, so if there's some danger, Krishna will let me know somehow or other. Okay, we're 5 minutes late, so I'm going to stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.